I'm Captain Benjamin Sisko. Welcome to Deep Space Nine.
Red alert! All crew members report to battle stations.
Red alert. Shields up.
What shields?
You Starfleet officers! Now start acting like it!
Oh, it's just Garrick. Plain, simple Garrick.
Dax, we might have just discovered the first stable wormhole known to exist.
The wormhole does bring them our way, doesn't it?
Everyone wants a piece of the new frontier.
This will sure become a leading center of commerce and of scientific exploration. But for Starfleet, one of our most important posts.
Quite a motley crew you've assembled here, Benji.
Listen to The Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast. And here are your hosts, Andrew Leyland and Paul Spataro.
Bloody hell. Oh, I love a woman in uniform.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Listen to the Prophets, the Star Trek Deep Space Nine review program where myself and my two faithful subordinates review every episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Whoa. Subordinate? I am flunky material, I'll have you know. Wait.
Well, you understand, Bill, that subordinate is just a nicer word for flunky.
Oh. Oh, well, okay then.
Carry on. I'm Paul Spataro, and I am joined by my ever-present and better co-hosts, Mr. Andrew Leyland.
Hello.
And Dr. Bill Robinson.
Hey, I didn't get a better co-host. What?
I said better co-hosts.
What? Oh, okay. The S was silent.
Sounds like steam escaping.
Hello.
Today we are here to look at Deep Space Nine, Season 3, Episode 15, Destiny.
And I got nothing. I was going to maybe throw in a Destiny's Child song, but I can't think of one.
Destiny.
It is destiny. Your destiny.
What was the thing he does in Young Frankenstein? Destiny. Something for me. I don't remember.
All right, you win. I give. I'll say it. No escaping,
that's for me. Destiny. No escaping, that's for me. Destiny. Dr. Frankenstein, wake up.
What is it?
You were having a nocturne.
Oh, well, that one felt very flat. Have we got any new Star Trek news to go over?
No.
All right.
Nine.
Pull out the old Bible.
Okay.
And we are up to Nog. Probably should have read this one last episode. One of the other Ferengi who works for Quark has a teenage son who will become friends with the commander's son. Nog is Peck's bad boy. The kind of kid our parents didn't want us to associate with. And that's the entire entry on Nog. What is Peck's bad boy? Do either of you know what that reference is? Because I do not.
Peck's bad boy? Is that like... I don't know. I've never heard that. Peck's. How is it spelled?
Like Gregory Peck.
P-E-C-K-S?
Yes.
Is it in quotations?
No. It's okay. Apparently, Peck's bad boy. According to Wikipedia, Peck, popularly known as Peck's bad boy, is a fictional character created by George Wilbur Peck, first appearing in the 1883 novel Peck's Bad Boy and His Pa. The bad boy has appeared in numerous print, stage, and film adaptations. The character is portrayed as a mischievous prankster, and the phrase Peck's bad boy has entered the language to refer to anyone whose mischievous or bad behavior leads to annoyance or embarrassment. Described as a vicious little swaggerer and no more than callous brute, Henry's actions were more mean-spirited than earlier boyhood characters like Huckleberry Finn, and modern criticism views the violence and racism in the original stories as objectionable or politically incorrect. And that's...
Which is probably why it has disappeared from the language.
Something I was totally unfamiliar with.
Yeah, it can't have entered the lexicon that much, given that the three of us have never heard of it.
Mm.
I could accept maybe one of us have never heard of it, probably me. But to all three of us not to heard it, I think they're stretching it a bit, though, to say it's become part of the language.
Yeah,
well, it's from 1883, so it's perhaps it entered and left the language before any of us were any the wiser to it.
Because the last reference here, like any type of film or book, the last book was in 1908, and the last film was in 1938. So, yeah, it's pretty much a Captain Dunsel term, I guess.
Yeah, But I get, you know, now that we've read the Wikipedia entry on Peck's Bay.
Yeah, oh yeah, now it makes sense.
I get what they're saying, but I don't think that was true to the character. I think the character was always more nuanced, even in the beginning, was more nuanced than the way Peck's bad boy apparently is. And as the series has gone on, you know, again, it would have been good to have read this on the last episode, but, you know, we've seen him to be not only more nuanced than that, but more honorable than that. He's kind of rejected some of the Ferengi philosophy because he doesn't feel he fits in with it.
And well, he has now. I mean, really, his big turn was the last episode we just talked about, because the episode prior to that, he was still deep in his Ferengi ways. I mean, it was kind of a quick turn, but, you know, maybe that was him just trying to live up to his Ferengi ways and not really wholeheartedly embracing them. So.
No, but even in the last episode where he acted, you know, boorishly towards the young lady, by the end of the episode, he and Jake had a conversation where, you know, they talked about the fact that it's a cultural difference and that they have to overcome that. And it wasn't that he was misbehaving so much as he was acting the way he's supposed to under his culture. You know, there were episodes where he was presented as the, you know, in quotes, bad boy. But I don't think that, I think the character was always somewhat more nuanced than that.
Hmm. Yeah, I think the writers very early on tapped into something with Nog that perhaps they didn't expect. Maybe it was the actor, maybe it was them realizing what he could do, I don't know. But yeah, they took him in a slightly more interesting direction.
Yeah, and you know, we're all the better for it. Anyway, moving on to, unless we have anything else on discussions, we can get right into this episode.
Nope, let's talk about Destiny.
Let's talk about Destiny.
Let's talk about you and me.
About the comet going through the wormhole.
Let's talk about how Tracy Scoggins is still hot as a Cardassian.
Colin Galoria. Oh, man, that just doesn't work.
It doesn't scam, does it?
I could do the other Gloria song. G-I-L-O-R-A. Galora. Never mind. Right. Why don't you do the plot, Paul?
A daring mission of peace.
We have to be prepared for trouble.
A Bajoran prophecy of doom.
We are on the verge of a great disaster.
Beyond time.
You believe the prophecy is coming true?
Yes, I do.
Beyond space.
The Sword of Stars.
One fateful decision.
Saw the carrier wave caused the wormhole to open.
One man's destiny.
Fire!
Next time on Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
As I previously said, Destiny is Season 3, Episode 15. It is directed by the Will of Landau. written by David Cohen and Mark Weiner. It guest stars Tracy Scoggins, Wendy Robbie, Eric Avari, and Jessica Handara. Sisko, Odo, and Dax prepare for the arrival of a team of Cardassian scientists who plan to deploy a subspace relay to allow communication through the Bajoran wormhole to the Gamma Quadrant for the first time. Vedic Yara arrives to tell Commander Sisko that a Bajoran prophecy, Trakor's Third, warns that this situation would bring catastrophe. A river on Bajor being diverted and the fact that the station was Cardassian all fall into his interpretation of this prophecy, along with the scientists being three vipers attempting to peer into the temple gates as their relay being put into operation. Yarka is treated with skepticism after he admits that he is the only Vedic that interprets the prophecy in this manner, especially when it is learned that there are only two scientists, not three. The scientists arrive and debrief the station crew about the experiment. They explain that there will be another scientist that will arrive later. This information startles Kira, who begins to wonder about the prophecy. Yarka confronts Kira about her faith and her duty to stop Sisko, while O'Brien and Dax get to know the two scientists, Ulani and Gilora. The third scientist, Dejar, arrives and is clearly not appreciated by the first two. While O'Brien and Gilora work on the station, complicated by the fact that Gilora misinterprets O'Brien's hostility towards her as a romantic overture in the Kardashian tradition, Sisko takes Ulani through the wormhole to set up the relay itself. They discover a comet. A sword of stars will appear in the heavens. And Kira is further convinced that it is part of the prophecy. Sisko confronts her and she explains her feelings on the matter, including the fact that she believes he is the emissary, who, according to the prophecy, is destined to be an essential part of the situation. The relay is deployed and the test begins. A particular carrier wave somehow activates the wormhole and causes its gravity well to increase. This causes the comet to change course and head towards the wormhole. They discover that an element in the core of the comet will cause a reaction if it enters the wormhole and destroy it forever. The crew comes up with a solution to destroy the comet by altering the Defiance phasers to generate a wider beam than normal in order to vaporize the comet evenly. Sisko, despite starting to believe in the prophecy, goes ahead with the plan. They attempt to destroy the comet, but the phasers fire a standard burst which breaks the comet into fragments. Dax explains that the modified phasers never came online. O'Brien thinks he made a mistake, but Gilora accuses Dejar of sabotage. Sabotage? Sabotage. Saying it wasn't O'Brien's fault. It is revealed that Dejar is part of the Cardassians' intelligence agency, the Obsidian Order, and was placed there to sabotage the mission. One of the scientists suggests creating a subspace field around the fragments to isolate the solithium as it goes through the wormhole. The plan nearly works, but some of it leaks out and reacts with the wormhole. However, this turns out to be unexpectedly beneficial. A subspace filament forms along the entire length of the wormhole, establishing the communications link. Kira and Sisko realize that the entire prophecy actually came true. The three Vipers were the three comet fragments, and the solithium ignited the wormhole, burning the temple gates, so they'd never close again.
The end.
I, once again, was pretty riveted by this episode. I feel like the show has, you know, like with all serialized shows, I think there are some peaks and valleys in it. And we got into the third season on a high note, and then we didn't really go low, I don't think, with the exception of Meridian. But we kind of fell into some kind of standard storytelling as we were going along. And now I feel like we're getting more deeply into the mythology and world building and everything that's going on. And this continuing plot thread that's going through with the wormhole and the you know, the space aliens or prophets. There's a lot happening here, and it's getting a little heavier, and I think it's where the show really kind of hits its stride when it does things like this. And they managed to do it while still doing a typical Star Trek, we got to figure out how to get by this problem thing. But adding in the element of the prophecy and the Vedic who's preaching doom based on the prophecy and his interpretation apparently seeming realistic for a while, I think added, you know, a lot of dramatic tension to it. I really liked, and probably my favorite thing in this episode, was the dilemma that was confronted by Sisko. First of all, he doesn't really believe he's the emissary. He thinks that that's some sort of, you know, religious, you know, fanaticism that's just being overblown. And then he's got this kind of, you know, problem with, do I listen to what the Bajorans want, because ultimately, you know, their safety, their planet, and that's a big reason why we're here, or do I just follow Starfleet protocol? And ultimately he goes with the Starfleet protocol, but proves for it to be true to what the Bajorans need anyway. So I thought this was a very solid episode. What do you guys think?
I agree with you. I thought this was quite an interesting episode. It was nice to see not all Cardassians are as we have seen them being portrayed before. It was nice to see the scientific Cardassians. One of them developing a crush on Chief O'Brien was actually quite cool. Which I thought that was quite an interesting touch. I thought this one was really good. I really did enjoy this one. I thought it was solid. Again, another good solid episode. Good writing, good performances.
Yeah, I particularly liked Eric Lavari, because he's always plays the sage or the man with wisdom, it seems, because he was in Stargate as one of the original Stargate movie. He was on what was the planet? Abydos, I believe. He was like the elder on Abydos, and he was also he was in the Planet of the Apes reboot, the first one.
Mm-hmm. Was he not Elektra's dad as well in Daredevil, the film?
Yes. He's one of those characters that when you see him, you're like, oh, I know him. So here he plays Vedic Yarka, and he's they're all starting to think that he's not really a Vedic anymore, because that's not really mentioned in here, that he was kicked out of the order because his views are a little extreme. So that leads more into Sisko being like, well, you know, this guy's just a little bit of he's somewhat of a zealot. I'm not really gonna listen to this. And in fact, at the end of the episode, they're speaking on the station, and Yarka is like, oh, well, let me tell you about this other prophecy. And he says, the emissary will, will meet great trials and burning. And so that kind of hints at the Paw Wraiths to come and such. And that's a nice little Easter egg that was dropped, that if you're not really paying attention at the end of the episode, you'll miss it. Because they're saying it as they walk off camera, and it's very faint and subtle when he's talking. I had two other little quick notes before I forget them. One, comets usually only have a tail when they're in close proximity. Well, not close, but in like a solar system, in near a sun or something, that would cause their tail, because the tail is formed by the melting and giving off of gases. I don't know if we'll have anything to, or if our science correspondent will bring that up. If you can, Paul will try to get me into a faux argument with him, like he usually likes to. And the space relay was played.
Pull the glove down and challenge him.
I challenge nothing. And the subspace relay was played by the repurposed Amoroso Observatory from Star Trek Generations. I don't know if you guys caught that. They cut the longer arms off of it and made them all even, and made that giant model, for that big, thing. Now, little space relay.
I didn't catch it on the show. It was after they pointed it out to me. I was like, oh, right, yeah, okay, that does look familiar.
Yeah, I didn't catch it at first either, but I thought, that looks kind of familiar. Maybe if I had done turned my head to the side like a dog, I might have caught it. But it was then after I read that, I was like, oh, yeah, that's what that was.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes, it was particularly interesting that, I guess, in Cardassian mating rituals, being an a-hole is a romantic overture. Having hostility. Yes, and she was still hot, even as a Cardassian.
She was probably hotter as a Cardassian.
Her eyes are just so mesmerizing.
Yeah, especially in that makeup.
Because it just really accentuates them.
So, yeah. Tracy Scoggins, she's not really an actress I normally have a lot of time for. But let's be honest, in Babylon 5, she was only there to replace Claudia Christensen, so that wasn't really her fault. But she was good in this one. I liked the depiction of the Cardassian scientist. I thought that was interesting.
Plus, she played Cat Grant.
She did, yeah. Yes, she was on the Colbys as well, yeah.
The spin-off from Dynasty.
Mm-hmm.
And how could you go wrong with that?
Well, most of the time, I don't really have any time for this is a prophecy and what does it all mean episodes, but this one handled it quite well. I was quite impressed with it. Well, I didn't remember much about it after I'd finished watching it.
I like that the prophecy was misinterpreted but turned out to be true anyway. I like that kind of twist on it. It wasn't
and Kira has to juggle her faith and her duty in this episode, and they both kind of mix together nicely.
Yeah, I you know, you saw her, you know, every time there was something that seemed to fit with the prophecy, you know, you could just see her react to it and you know, have to fight that urge with the three vipers and the comet and everything. It was just, I thought it was very well written. Mm-hmm. And very well acted as well. And, you know, they gave O'Brien a little chance to shine, which we haven't really seen too much of O'Brien shining lately. So that was kind of cool. But, you know, I think ultimately this episode rose and fell on, or just rose, because I don't think it fell at all, on the shoulders of Commander Sisko.
Yeah, we also didn't really have a... I guess the B-plot would be kind of the situation with showing how the Cardassian scientists were more open to things than regular, you know, like the Obsidian Order scientist that shows up, although we find out she's Obsidian Order later, because she's very by the book and doesn't want to mingle, whereas the other two are like, oh, yeah, we want to eat, you know. When they bring the Cardassian food, they're like, ew.
Interesting, a little interesting Cardassian cultural subplot was the fact that men don't make good engineers in Cardassia. I thought that was kind of a little twist on, you know, on some misogynistic thoughts.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, because they're too busy puffing themselves up, wanting to boss everybody around to be a scientist, I guess. And that's considered women work in Cardassian society, I guess.
An interesting...
Or Kardashian society. Oh, sorry.
Interesting thought from the, was it Memory Alpha? The original story idea revolved around Starfleet seeking to relieve Sisko of his post. As David Cohen recalls, we had enjoyed Deep Space Nine's pilot and the mythic overtones it suggested. As Commander Sisko was believed by an alien race to be the emissary from their gods, as prophesied in their scriptures, it occurred to us that Sisko's bosses couldn't be very comfortable with that. What if they pulled a Heart of Darkness on him and sent someone to extract him from this situation? The perfect chance to do so, we decided, was if there was some specific prophecy that would, ipso facto, prove that he's not the emissary. We'd raise the stakes by having a pencil-pushing staff officer threaten to transfer him to another command if he doesn't end the emissary talk. They decided that the problem was Sisko really was the emissary, so every effort to extricate him from this situation only furthered the prophecy. By the end, even the pencil-pushing staff officer has played a role in the prophecy and is in it as deep as Sisko, so Starfleet Command decides just to live with the whole situation. The pencil-pushing officer mentioned in the original story was named Marlow, an homage to the character in Heart of Darkness. I think that would have been awesome. I love this episode, but you could have done that storyline anyway.
Could we have had Martin Sheen play him?
He could have.
Bajor. I'm still in Bajor. Nothing. Okay. Sisko could shave his head like he is going to next season. He could have been Colonel Kurtz.
But I think that could have been just really cool. I mean, you have to be a little subtle in the writing of it, because you don't want it to be too heavy-handed and hit you over the head with it. But to have them keep wanting to pull Sisko from the command because they're not comfortable with the prophecy and have circumstances keep requiring them to keep him there.
Well, yeah, because, because they actually have an actual case file, because if you want to look at Garth of Izar, who went nutso and... He thought he became a god, and here you have another Starfleet officer who is being, you know, revered as a religious icon. So I can see where they may have, you know, that this could become a problem, because it has happened in the past, you know, or Kirk thinking he's, I am Kirok!
Miramani!
I am Sisko! I am Sisko!
But, you know, I would have liked that, Definitely, I would have liked that if they had put that in there. I don't know if I would have wanted them to do an episode about it so much as having it as a running subplot.
Hmm. Well, I mean, so you would rather it being a running subplot than just a one-off? Which were you saying that you would want? One episode or just have like a plot?
No, I would have preferred it if they had it as a running subplot that, you know, Starfleet isn't comfortable with Sisko's role as the emissary.
Yeah, they could just
and they want to extricate him from there, but circumstances.
Admiral, what's your name? Nechayev could come on every now and then and scold him.
Yeah, and you have to be careful with it because you don't want to turn it into Murphy Brown's secretary, where we tried to pull him again and we couldn't. You know, you don't want that to become the thing, but you could. You know, they definitely could have had. You know, like I said, you could have done it more subtly, and yeah, having the admiral come on and. You know, maybe like not allow him to participate in certain negotiations, or you know, pulling him from certain situations because
he would be seen as, you know, this would be seen as his role as the emissary.
But somehow, yeah. When it's all done, it only solidifies his role as the emissary. Somehow, you know, I mean, it would have taken some clever writing, but I think it could have been done, and I think it would have been added another level to things.
Well, this is another good step that is slowly building to him as the emissary anyway. It's going to, you know, and I think it's, if I remember correctly, it's only going to start getting more obvious from here as we go.
And like I said, I think, you know, his conflict between wanting to follow the wishes of the Vedic, but also having his, you know, requirements as to Starfleet, I think that was nicely done. And, you know, if Kira were in command, they would have scuttled this mission. She would not have gone forward with it. That much is clear. The only reason she goes forward is because Sisko orders it, and she does have a loyalty to him. And I think that
and
was
it happens
well
because
done,
so. And it's because he's the emissary, you know. So he actually, you know, yeah. So it all plays into itself. That it's his insistence that he's not the emissary, which is what causes everything to happen.
Because there's a lot of interesting stuff being played up with the emissary, though, because Sisko's always kind of downplayed it ever since the pilot. Mm-hmm. But again, as we get into season 6 and 7, his emissary status becomes very important. And even Vadik Wynn believes that he's the emissary.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think she's very uncomfortable with that.
Oh, yeah, she hates it, but she believes it.
Yeah, that's yet another. That is a subplot that we will be seeing over and over again. So that one I liked that they went into.
Mm-hmm.
But that also could have been the source of some tension between Bajor, who was, you know, being considered to be in Starfleet, not Starfleet, in the Federation, and the Federation itself, that, you know, they consider Sisko to be their emissary, and Starfleet doesn't like, not Starfleet, the Federation doesn't like that. I think that could have been mined a little bit as well.
Hmm.
Anyway. We really don't have a B plot in this, do we?
No, unless you consider just the stuff that happens on the interaction with the scientists with the crew, I think would be the only real quote unquote B plot, and maybe Quark's bad what was that stuff? Jamja juice or something? I don't know. Remember, he had all the...
Yeah, he was ready to get the Cardassian concession on things.
Yeah.
And his stuff was bad. All right, so I guess it's time to rate this.
Oh.
Unless Bill has something.
No. you and I... Remember, we had talked about this episode, what, about 2-3 weeks ago? And we had our episodes confused. We thought the B-plot of this episode was the Nog plot from the previous episode. Remember
yes.
that?
Yes,
we're like, that's a... And we couldn't remember what the A-plot of this episode was. And it's funny that you said, Andy, that, like, I didn't really... I think we all said that we didn't really remember this episode, but yet it's kind of really important.
Yeah.
It was like, I don't remember what happened. And we had just watched it, and then we were both talking, and we still couldn't remember it. It's very, very odd that, you know, I mean, strange, very strange.
And that's got me wondering, did Blaine think it was important? What would Blaine say? Well, Blaine would say, here we go, guys. We've got Eric Avari, Tracy Scoggins, the Obsidian Order, and legitimate commentary on how people from within and outside of any particular faith view its scriptures. One person's flying spaghetti monster is another person's dinner. I like the replicators and climate controls were adjusted to account for the differences in species. This is, again, more interesting than entertaining. I also like reinforcing Dax's acceptance of Ferengi culture, as evidenced by her passing familiarity with the rules of acquisition. Blaine. I found it to be, that's the only area where I disagree with him, and the only area, but the only one I disagree with is that I found it to be entertaining.
Yeah, I thought this was an entertaining episode with a lot of interesting stuff in it that they'll follow up. It's a shame we didn't see these Cardassian scientists again, because I quite liked them.
Yeah.
Do you think Mark felt similarly?
I don't know. Should we have a look?
He says, "Greetings and felicitations, gentlemen. This is an episode I seem to return to quite often. First, I love Eric Avari. He's such an interesting actor, and I've always enjoyed him ever since I saw him in The Mummy back in 1999. That's a movie I've always been fond of. Very entertaining. I wish they would have brought his DS9 character back. Unfortunately, this is the only time we see him in the series. The aspect of the episode that fascinates me the most is the relationship between Kira and Sisko as emissary. This is the first episode, I think, we see Kira actually acknowledge Sisko as emissary. I've always wondered, when did she first find out Kai Opaka recognized Sisko as the emissary? What her reaction, and how long did it take her to come around to accepting it? I would like to know more about her emotional and spiritual journey during the first three seasons. I thought the one-on-one scene between Kira and Sisko on the Defiant, when he was dressing her down for bringing up the Sword of the Stars on the bridge, was very well acted by both Brooks and Visitor. I also thought the scene between Kira and Vedic Yarka, on the promenade was key. This was the first time it was discussed. This is the first time it was discussed that Kira is Bajoran with the most access to the emissary, and that her role might not be in the chain of command, but to help the emissary fulfill his destiny. This is something I would imagine she would spend a lot of time thinking about, which, what exactly is her role? How did she end up so close to this important figure in Bajoran history? Now for the prophecy. Quite frankly, I've become sick and tired of prophecies and storytelling. Sounds like what you were saying, Andy. We have prophecies in Star Wars, Star Trek, and Harry Potter, three of my favorite franchises. Enough is enough already. There better not be any prophecies in Episode 8. This particular prophecy in DS9 doesn't bother me too much.
I love that R2-D2 bleeped when you said that.
Sorry. Yeah, I caught that.
That was the timing.
But the idea of prophecy does become a bit of a crutch in future seasons and the book series after the conclusion of the TV show. Later on, it starts to feel like Sisko can't take a shit without having it been prophesized. It kind of gets annoying after a while. We get it. The prophets know the future. Now stop telling us what's going to happen and just let it happen. I mean, what is the point of the prophets delivering all these prophecies to the Bajorans other than to prove they can? Having this particular prophecy doesn't actually affect any of the events in the episode, so it's kind of pointless. Finally, I did think the Cardassian who was hitting on O'Brien was kind of hot. Her interactions with O'Brien were great. Again, I would have liked to have seen more of her. We did get a little peek into Cardassian culture, learning that women are more dominant in sciences and how aggressive behavior is actually a come-on in their culture. I like those little touches. That's all for now. Thanks, guys, and keep up the great podcasting. Mark K. Thanks, Mark.
Yeah, I think we all agreed that the Cardassian who hit on O'Brien was pretty hot.
Yes. and I do agree that they can overdo the prophecies, but I thought it was well done in this episode, and it didn't really bother me at all. So take that for what you will. All right, so now I think it's time for us to rate the episode. And seeing as this is mine, I guess I go first. And as I said right from the start, I thought it was entertaining. I thought it was kind of riveting. And I thought it was well written and well acted. So it's got pretty much all the points hit. Except I just don't think it hits that level of top episode. It isn't so thought-provoking that it's going to stay with me for any length of time. So I'm going to give it a solid, but not top of the line rating of 3.5.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go with the 3.5 as well. This was, I mean, it's kind of funny that, like I said, that we'd actually forgot this episode after seeing it like a week later, and that how it actually is kind of important to the overall story as it goes. And the guest stars were great. Oh, the other lady, the other Cardassian scientist, one of the good ones, she was in Twin Peaks and also Wes Craven's People Under the Stairs.
That was
her. When I don't know if any Paul, do you remember that movie?
No, never saw it.
Oh, well, it's an interesting one.
Yeah, I remember it being okay. Yeah.
Yeah, it's got the guy that was in the James Bond film that feeds that feeds Felix Leiter to the sharks. That guy.
Robert Davi.
Yes, yes. No, not him. The other guy who was the turncoat CIA agent that turned on him.
Oh, I know the one. Yeah, I know the one.
Yeah, that guy. He was the other lead in that. Anyway. But we're not talking about People Under the Stairs or prophecies. So, yes, I will also go with a 3.5, and maybe 0.25 of that is just for Tracy Scoggins.
Of course it is. I'm going to go for a 3. It's a good, solid one. It's well written. It's well acted. It's important. I didn't remember anything about it. So that ultimately takes a 0.5 off. But it's not a bad episode by any stretch of the imagination.
Alright, so that's Destiny, and do we have a little email to read?
Yes. I'll do the first one, Bill do the second, you do the third again.
Alright, I guess.
Sure. Alright, that seems okay, doesn't it? I've not read them in advance, so... Alright, our first email tonight is from Gene Hendricks. A dream to some, a nightmare to others. Andy, Bill, and Paul. I agree, it was a great choice to show that the Dominion thinks about the best course of action before committing, but I also fall into Andy's camp. Yes, they got some stuff wrong, but not if any of the characters make the leap of it not being real. It would have been a better payoff if Sisko had figured out that it was all a dream about halfway through and did something to invalidate the scenario. I also suppose that everyone now needs to change all their access codes, and any SOP for defense needs to be completely rethought, since all of their minds have been read. There's no way that spies wouldn't have gotten all that information, so some of it had to be scanned from the subjects, which means that the Dominion now has all the information, just like the Borg did with Picard. The idea of Odo having been sent out into the galaxy as part of an intelligence gathering program feels like it was tacked on just to explain the choice of the Founders being shapeshifters. The plan just doesn't make sense on its face. I would have liked the reveal of who the Founders were to be teased out for a little bit longer, simply to give us a sense of misdirection as to who is really running things. This just seems a tad too neat and tidy. And that's from G. Yeah, you're right. It is the writers kind of just pulling it all together a bit much. But I vaguely remember that episode was working.
Yeah, I thought it worked, and I guess there are ways of... shoring it up a little bit and making it even a little better, but yeah, I'm okay with what we got.
Yeah.
All right. Our next email from Gene, which the subject is meta feedback. Bill, hey, I'm top billing for once. Oh, get it? Top billing? Bill? Never mind. Bill, Paul, and Andy, to quote the late, great George Carlin on the two shows that I was on, pardon me, I have nothing to say. Gene. All right. And that's it.
Fair enough. Yeah.
Oh, I got the quick email. Yes.
You got a good straw there.
All right. So,
on to you, Paul.
I have no comment on Gene's email. But going on to the next one is from Adam Zarkowski, and it's titled Trying to Help. I love the idea of your podcast and appreciate your efforts. Please take my criticisms as trying to help. The best part of your show is the Bible readings. Very unique. The worst part of your show is the production values coming out of the Brit. I'm not sure the solution, but I'd wager that a better mic positioned further away will help. Also, he needs to be taught that laughing loudly into the mic is unpleasant to listeners, as is shouting anything like Alla Marine for existence. If you need an example, listen to the first 6 minutes of LTTP number 50. I'd suggest editing more and starting the show in a more professional manner without random non-topic talk at the beginning. I was wondering if a 4-star rating still helps the show, or if it's only 5-star ratings that help. Love, your pal, Ed Rock. Well, first of all, there's a couple of things I definitely want to address in this, and I do appreciate criticism and suggestions that are presented in a reasonable and respectful manner. So thank you for that. I do think calling Andy the Brit is a little less than respectful, even though it is what he is.
It's my superhero name.
It almost sounds like it's being sent in a sarcastic, almost a little bit of a snarky way. So take that for what it's worth, Adam. First of all, I produced the show, not Andy. So the production values that you're getting that are poor are mine. I do sometimes leave a longer bit before we get to the opening credits if it's unrelated to the show or if it doesn't fit into the flow of the show. I know I could put them after the credits, but a lot of times I like to have it beforehand. Episode number 50 in particular that you point out has a particularly long, about 6 minutes before the opener of the show, but I thought it was an entertaining conversation. I wanted to leave it in. Different minds can differ on that. I don't know that I'm going to really change my style as far as that goes, but yeah, I do try not to do too much in the beginning too often, and I don't think I go... I think that was more of an exception to the rule than typical. Andy has a better mic now, so we'll take that for what it's worth. But the other point, the Andy laughing into the microphone, when I say something that makes Andy laugh into the microphone, it makes me happy. So I don't want that to change.
That's
the instant gratification and feedback that I hope for sometimes.
My son Ben loves it when Andy laughs.
Yeah, I think I personally think Andy has a very compelling laugh, but that's me.
I think to spring to Adam's defense, I think he was more relating to the fact that it's the headset microphone was a little bit too close, which is one of the reasons I was happy to get rid of it. So now that we've got the new microphone, maybe it's not as irritating.
And yes, I mean, there was some points in the past that where your laugh would sometimes break up. And it wouldn't be clear. It would be, and I could see to where, depending on how you're listening, if that was plugged into your ear, it might have been a little unpleasant because of the breakup with the laughter. So, I mean, I see his point, but I still love your laugh, Andy. So.
Aww.
Yeah, and the Alla Marine thing, that's one of our bits.
It's not going anywhere, buddy. Sorry.
Yeah, really. So, it is what it is, and, get used to it, because that one's not going anywhere.
Alla Marine!
There you go.
We'll have to whisper, Alla Marine.
But, like I said, I do appreciate commentary that's meant to help us improve, because, we know we're not perfect, and, we'd like to be as put on as entertaining a show as we can, while still having fun doing it. If being entertaining starts meaning not having fun, then I'll skip it. But your notations are being taken into consideration, and maybe they will help us improve. But I guess that's it for Destiny. What do we got next time?
Next time on an all new episode of Listen to the Prophets, it's a Ferengi show. Prophet motif, which means Wallace Shawn's back. Which is always nice.
Hey, I just found this this prophecy. Hold on a second, I gotta translate it. carry that up there. Oh, it says I'm gonna go to the bathroom.
Weirdly, so am I.
Alright, well, while they do that, we'll take a 2-week break.
It'll take that long for Bill to finish.
The Celestial Temple has to open.
Yeah, and then he'll have to clean out the toilet from being blocked.
Listen to the Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast, is a Two True Freaks presentation. It is hosted by Andrew Leyland and Paul Spataro. The music and sound clips used in the show are copyright CBS and Paramount Entertainment. If you like to buy stuff from Amazon, and who doesn't, why not drop by the twotruefreaks.com website, where if you click the little link that we have there, it will take you straight through that site, and whilst it won't cost you any extra, we'll put a few shekels in our tip jar, which helps create content like this. We very much hope you enjoyed listening to The Prophets. Every episode is dedicated to the memory of our pal, Sean Engel.
So I was just like, I just spin and just then they just rebooted it and took a dump. Because I was so pensive and tied up at that point, I was just like, I gotta go to the bathroom now.
Are you at all familiar with the concept of too much information?
No, why do you ask?
No reason.
Oh, I did talk to Scott last night because
Scott?
Yes, Scott. What? What is that? Why is that funny?
Yeah, that isn't. I'm still laughing. I was going to ask you the consistency and color of it, but I'll leave it.
Light brown.
Okay,
with a
goodbye.
You can tell a lot about somebody's health from the consistency and color of their poo.
Not hard.
It's Bill. You really need to do that to tell about his health? Just look at him. He's like walking death. Oh, yeah, I tell you, he spent 2 weekends in my home. I have never once checked the consistency of his poo.
Well, maybe you should. A good friend and make sure he was healthy.
Well, I did plug up the toilet, so that was...
Oh, it's always a pleasure walking a toilet, isn't it?
Well, you know, when you gotta wait for... You gotta wait for the bathroom down in the basement because, you know, every time I got up to go to the bathroom, for some reason, Scott had already beat me in there. I'm like, dude, every time?
There's 3 bathrooms in my house, Bill. You just have to walk up the stairs.
You know what? On the second trip, I went up there and I used one when the bathroom was used, but I was unfamiliar with the territory. I'm not gonna go stomping around up there, and you know, you might forget
what that was in my kitchen.
Come down and blow me away, Dirty Harry style.
Unfamiliar toilets confuse Bill.
And all this confusion.
How does this thing work?
You know. And all the confusion. Did he wipe 5 times or did he wipe 6 times?
This one has the padded seat. I don't know if I could figure it out. I don't know, actually. If he used the one with the padded seat, he may never have left.
He may have just got comfy in there and stayed. He'd never got rid of him.
You know,
just have to bring his food into the bed.
I find the ones with the padded seats, I don't like them. But it's a very personal reason why. Let's just say
Okay, we're done. Don't worry. Don't need to know a reason.
Unless, of course, it was open in a U-shape and it didn't have... I don't like small seats because, you know, the package sometimes rubs the seat and the...
Bill. Yeah, yeah.
Don't need to know.
Oh, sorry. Well, Andy seems to want to know.
It's okay. All right.
Andy's concerned about me.
I am.
It's
all right. I'm worried about you.
It's okay. All right. Let's go to sleep now.
What was I talking about? I don't remember now. Oh, Scott. Scott. That's right.
You talked to Scott last night.
Back
on
target.
Yeah.
So you talked to Scott. All right. We ready for... We might as well jump right in. We're already almost 8 o'clock.
Yep.
Yep. Do you want to stop and start to have a cleaner recording, or do you just want to go?
No, I say let's just keep going.
Okay.